I'm a believer that we can always find ways, especially with technology these days, in finding ways to make our team members more efficient, right? It's like the value, like what value are we giving? Now, my job as CEO, though, is how can I assist my people as much as possible to take that time on desk and go like this? Because the shorter that we can make it, the faster we're actually working and getting money in our client's pocket, the faster the firm is being refed. The churn rate for us is going to be our close rate. To me, close does not mean just saying that we have a settlement or that there is a verdict. Close means money in your account, period. The idea of like, well, I've gotten the verdict, hands up, I'm moving on. Until that client has money in their hand, we still haven't completed our duty yet to them. And so I think it's those things that are really, really important.
Welcome to Trial Lawyer View, the podcast dedicated to the fierce yet compassionate lawyers who fight every day for justice in the courtroom. Our guests are top trial lawyers and their firms who share their stories and experiences, offering valuable insights into their journey, as well as expert guests who provide actionable strategies and practical tips for personal injury lawyers looking to optimize their operations, enhance client service, and drive growth in their practices. Trial Lawyer View is brought to you by Synergy. At Synergy, we aren't just a service provider. We are a strategic partner for personal injury law firms, seamlessly integrating with law firms to boost efficiency from day one. Outsourcing cumbersome administrative tasks like lien resolution and Medicare compliance to an expert partner like Synergy enables personal injury firms to focus on what they do best.
Welcome to the Trial Lawyer View podcast. Today I'm joined by Christopher Nicolaysen, founder and CEO of Springs Law Group, a personal injury law firm based in Colorado Springs. Since launching the firm in 2017, Christopher has focused on not only delivering exceptional legal services, but also building a thriving business. He brings a wealth of experience in law firm management, business development, and marketing strategies, which have led to remarkable growth for his firm. With a diverse background that includes running multiple businesses and overcoming significant challenges, he has cultivated a unique approach to leadership, blending his legal expertise with entrepreneurial mindset. Christopher is committed to ensuring that Springs Law Group delivers exceptional legal services while fostering a supportive and thriving work environment. He loves diving into business books like Buy Back Your Time, Traction, E-Myth, and Good to Great, and finds great value in participating in law firm masterminds to exchange ideas and strategies. In this episode, we'll dive into Chris's journey, strategies for scaling law firm operations, creating a positive work culture, and using coaching masterminds to maximize growth strategies. Christopher, welcome to Trial Lawyer View. Thank you for being with me today on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited.
So from doing my homework and seeing stuff you've put out there, I know that you are focused on mindset. I'm curious about what challenges you faced that made you recognize the importance of the mindset you adopt to ultimately succeed.
Yeah, I think so. Looking way back, and this is, you know, I went to law school later in life, but the reality for me was actually the law school experience really made me think about mindset. I remember, you know, one story I tell is this idea of being called out in contracts class for passing on a question. You know, we were close to finals. And so I said, well, I was busy studying for finals and didn't really prep for the class. And then my professor ends up telling the whole class to turn around and look at what a failure looks like. And so I was like, and then I have this class of like 100, over 100 people, you know, all flipping around, all eyes on me, right? But the reality was, is what I realized is after that, and then taking the final, I did pretty well. The reality is that he didn't actually understand the full story or what my true mission was right then, right? So to be called out by somebody that only sees like this really narrow view of who I was really kind of shifted. Now, in the moment, it hurt like heck. But then later on down the road, really, really helped me understand and kind of started shaping the mindset piece of it on, you know, kind of developing that, those kind of like, you know, that barrier and that shield that you need, right, to toughen up your mindset and kind of work it that way. So definitely back in law school is where it all started, I think.
So my contracts was my worst grade in law school, and it was always my nemesis. It just brought up like this feeling inside of me when you mentioned contracts class and an exam. And oh my God. For whatever reason, I don't know why I struggled with contracts. Only class I got a C in during law school, and it still frustrates me to this day. But you know, when we were talking before the podcast, we were talking a little bit about Spartan, and you know, I was thinking in terms of that, you know, the mindset that you have to take on in terms of training for something like that. And I, being a competitive cyclist for a long time, I did a lot of centuries, and like the mindset that you'd have to take even to complete something like that is one that I think has served me well in business and really just, you know, in anything I've endeavored to achieve. I'm curious in terms of how you've used mindset for specifically for that type of setting yourself up for that, you know, achieving your vision.
Yeah. And so like from a physical standpoint, I think you can use a lot of these physical pieces, right? Like cycling or, you know, the Spartan or other things. I'll go back to one of the bigger ones at first for me. It was doing 75 hard. I've done it 3 times, but I've only completed it once. And so I've started and failed. But guess what I've done each time though, that I do it, I learned something to set myself up a little bit better every time that I did it. And then on the third time, I think a part of it was that mindset shift that third time of like, there is nothing getting in the way this time. Like I will crawl to the end of this line to get there with that final one. And then, so I did that. I think it's been over a year, year and a half ago on that one, and finished that. And then the other one was this thing that I found out about from Dan Martell called the 12-hour walk. It's Colin O'Brady. He wrote a book called The 12-Hour Walk. He's the first person to walk solo from end to end of Antarctica. And then he wanted to create something that the everyday person could do. And in his book, he actually talks a lot about the limiting beliefs that you'll go through in these 12 hours of just walking. And he's right, because it's no technology with you. It's no pet. It's no friends. It's just you by yourself in your own head for 12 hours. And talk about a mindset challenge right there. It was me with me for a really, really long period. But the thing I told myself on this day, I'm doing it and I'm just going to complete it. And even if it doesn't look pretty and it's not perfect and everything else, I still did it. And I ended up with some, you know, some aches and pains and things like that, but ultimately came to some pretty interesting realizations during those 12 hours by myself.
You know, you keep bringing up these things that evoke these memories that are really painful. I did the New York Grand Fondo, which was something that was just on my bucket list, which is 100, I think that year was 106 or 109 miles, something like that. Anyway, tough ride, because it's got some pretty good climbing. Actually, you climb a mountain, but that day it was like in the low 50s, maybe upper 40s, and it rained the entire time. And it took me, I think it were 6.5 hours to complete, and cramping and like all sorts of, but I, you know, it was funny what that does for your brain in terms of, you know, that time in your head, you know, because like you said, there's a lot more physical effort than certainly walking, but it's that mental side, that mental toughness side, and really thinking about what do you want from that day. And I just remember that day is just emblazoned in my memory, particularly because at the end of it, I was so cold that I couldn't stop shaking for about an hour after I got into a car with heat going in it, because I was soaked and just freezing cold. But it's such a great memory because I achieved what I set out to do, even though it was incredibly hard. It's just that mental toughness is important in whatever you're going to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's over anything else. I think it's one of the biggest, you know, variables that kind of separate people, is the ability to get up and just go and do the thing, right? Because it's the idea of, what was it I heard? I think it was even recently, John Morgan over at CRISP was talking about the idea of visionaries versus vision makers. And he goes, everybody thinks Steve Jobs is a visionary. He's like, but the reality is he was actually a vision maker, because he went out and he actually did the thing and built the thing. Visionary just sits there on the couch and thinks about it, right? So the person could sit there and think about, well, I'll do 75 hard when X, right? Or I'll do the Spartan when Y, or it's, I mean, we hear it all the time about people. It's like, I'll go shoot my videos for my business when this piece of equipment comes in or when this script is written or whatever it may be. So there's always, you can find an excuse for it, but at some point you just got to jump off and go do it.
Well, that's a perfect segue into what I wanted to ask you about next, which gets back to something that you talked about, you know, how you went to law school later in life. And now, you know, you embarked upon a journey that you're fairly down the road on, which is building Springs Law Group and done it from the ground up. I'm curious about what were some of the worst things that happened, but ended up being the best over that journey, and what the biggest challenges you faced and how you've navigated to grow the firm to where it is today.
Yeah, I mean, we started in February of 2017 with three attorneys, and then since then have grown to five attorneys, including myself, and then a support staff of about 15. And so, and then that's current. So the hardest things, I think, was originally coming up with an identity. Because at the time we did, you know, one of the attorneys did personal injury, I did family law and some estate planning, and then we had another attorney that did family law. So we had like this hodgepodge, right? So the idea of your general practice almost and things like that. But then it was getting myself in a room with some other attorneys at a mastermind. And so we opened in February of 2017. In September of 2017, where I saw a bunch of niche down firms who really were focused. And so I think the hard part was actually deciding how to pull that trigger after we got back. You know, I think we potentially, you know, if going to a conference or going to a mastermind, you get kind of the, you get the high from going and everything is new and shiny, but then it's really whittling down. What do we want to do with this? So that was one of the hardest pieces of deciding, do we want to fully cut back these two producing areas of family law and estate planning? And if we do, what does that look like strategically? Because if we pull it too soon, we fail. If we wait too long, you get burnt out and you fail, right? You got to find this right sweet spot, I think, to do it. And then the other scary stuff, just like any business starting out or what have you, is making your first hire, you know? So hiring at first, because obviously the three of us that started, we all knew each other, and then making that first hire and making a mistake, you know, and not being the best leader and things like that. And then learning how to grow and do things like that throughout his problem. Those would be some of the bigger things that I think as we've progressed throughout have been, you know, some of the lessons learned is what my old coach used to call it. You know, as we go through each quarter, we're looking at what were some realizations that we had and what were some lessons learned that we've had and could do better at.
You mentioned two things. I want to come back to them, masterminds and coaching, because the power of that when you're building and scaling a business, I don't know if you can really give that enough credit in terms of helping be that support system and voice outside the organization. Because what I found is inside the organization, you get lost, you know, in the woods, you don't see the trees, and having that external voice really is helpful in just getting business ideas from people that are not buried in the minutiae of what you do every day. And I'm curious if that's what got you into transitioning into a CEO role with your firm. Because I know from doing my research, you said your passion lies in the business side of running a law firm. And I'm curious, at what point did you realize you needed to take that on, and how did it change things for you once you did?
Yeah. So when we started transitioning and moving domestic out, so then my caseload dwindled down. The other attorney primarily did PI. And so then I enjoyed the business conferences and things like that, enjoyed kind of talking about how can we, you know, get better at hiring, how can we connect better with our people, how can we work on systems, things like that. And so it was one of those things where for me, it just kind of seemed like a natural fit. And I was just talking to a new hire actually that started today. And I'm like, look, I am obsessive about Google reviews. Like, it's stupid. Like, I've gotten an award from my team for it about, what was the award? I think it was most likely to murder somebody to get a Google review, which that, you know, but But something like that. It just is. And so, but it's those foundational pieces, though, for me that I think about all the time, because having come into it later in life, I've worked at a lot of other, I worked retail in Vegas and worked at restaurants in Vegas. So I've seen what really great customer service can look like, really great teams and how they can function. But I've also seen really poorly run ones too. And I've worked at some, you know, regular businesses, but also law firms too, which is a business as well. And I'm a big believer that we are a business that happens to be a law firm over anything else. And if our egos are too big and we get in the way and say, no, we are lawyers, you know, everybody should bow down to my feet or whatever it may be, then I think we are purely mistaken. It is a thing where we need to honor and respect the people that are picking up the phone to call us and letting us work on their cases. Because this day and age, there are tons of choices out there. You know, it's not like the Little House on the Prairie days where there's the one law office shop, you know, and you kind of have the market. There's something out there for everybody. And I tell most people too, we're a good fit for most people, but we're not the right fit for everyone. And that's both with our team and with our clients, honestly, and that's okay. And it really is. And so I think for me, it just kind of fell into that business side of it, but it's also due to past experiences. But I'm a, you know, a voracious reader, and you know, most people say, well, what are you reading? And most of the time it is just any sort of like a self-help business book, something like that. So that's kind of where it really kind of works towards it in that sense.
Have you read Never Lose a Customer Again by Joey Coleman?
I have not. No.
I'll send you a link to that because he's been on the podcast actually twice, and he calls himself a recovering lawyer, but his expertise is in that customer experience and also the experience of team members too. He wrote a second book, a follow-up on that point. But great framework for customer experience. And it's such an overlooked thing. And he harped on that in personal injury practices. And having been involved in a pretty significant personal injury matter, I was struck by a car while I was cycling back in 2016. I know, you know, how personal that really is. And, you know, it's overlooked, I think, a bit in terms of how many law firms treat their clients. And I was very lucky. I had a friend who represented me in my personal injury case, but even still, it was such a difficult experience that because of the trauma that you wind up experiencing as someone that's been injured by someone else's negligence, you know, having a good customer experience in terms of the law firm is representing you is so important and critical, especially like you said, you're meticulous about the experience for the Google reviews. That's really important today. I mean, first thing everybody does today is look at reviews, looks online, wants to know what are people experiencing when they interact with this business. And like you said, personal injury law firms are a business.
Well, and it's like the idea, like I talk to people all the time about this thing, like work. I'm a believer that everyone should work restaurants or retail at some point in their lives. And it's a great foundational piece on teaching you how to actually interact with others and just have a dialogue, right? But I think we all know what a good customer service experience is like for you at a restaurant, right? We all have certain expectations on what we want. You go out to eat, you know what a good service experience looks like versus a poor one. And so for me, it's I don't want to wait for my drink to be refilled. I don't want to wait for my check too long. I don't want the waiter or waitress sitting in my booth with me. You know, those are pretty simple things, right? But I have this kind of checklist going off in my head that, you know, these things work, you know, and there's a good pacing of the food coming out or what have you. I think in law firms, though, because people don't have it happen to them every day, people go out to eat almost, you know, every day, every other day or once a week or what have you. They know that. But when they're working with a lawyer, it's up to us to actually set the standard for what high, great customer service actually looks like. We have to set the bar ourselves to kind of, you know, tell them how much we appreciate them versus us having an ego saying, no, you need to basically, you know, be so glad to hear the magic words coming out of my mouth right now, you know, which is something very, very different in that sense.
So I'm curious, being the CEO of your firm, how have you built your leadership team to maximize performance of the business and to execute on your vision for the firm?
Yeah, so we started out with myself. Back in the day, it was myself, my partner, and my wife. We were the, it was the three of us. And we had a business coach based out of Denver. Her name is Melissa Shanahan from Velocity Work. She does a combo of EOS, and I feel like EOS and scaling up feels like a combo, and some of Lencioni's stuff as well. But we would set quarterly goals, go through our org chart, and do things like that. Every quarter, we'd have rocks and kind of keep pushing forward and set our goals, which was very helpful for us. You know, we were probably 2 to 3 years in at that point. But since then, the leadership team has changed. My partner left at the end of last year, and then we've still got members on the leadership team. So I've got an operations manager who started out as a receptionist, moved to paralegal case manager. She has her master's degree in organizational leadership and sports, and so is very detail-oriented, exactly where I'm a visionary, a little not type A, and she's the perfect match for me in that sense, very process-driven. And then we've got, we have a leadership team of 6 right now. Again, still do the quarterly meetings, still meet. We meet as a leadership team virtually once every 2 weeks to go over issues, to go over done wells and things like that as well, and go over where are we with our numbers and how are we going to keep moving forward to get them. And what, you know, I'm one that there was a pod I heard a while back from this poker player who talked about the idea of experimenting. And so for me as a leader, I think it's really important that we go out and we experiment and we try things. But the poker player's reason for saying this, he's like, you want to experiment so that you can get data and information to decide now, are these things that we want to continue to do or not do? And one of my coaches, one of Melissa's big sayings was facts, not feelings. So can we look at the facts and the data to support our decision to either keep doing this or to not do it going forward? It shouldn't be like anytime, and I don't know about you, but anytime I hear the words like, I feel like X, it just gives me, you know, like the heebie-jeebies inside a little bit, because it's more of, as the CEO, I need to know factually, what are we doing and can we support this stuff factually?
And you touched on a lot there, that idea of having an operational system. EOS Traction is one. There's many others. And Mike Morse has been on the podcast, talked about IS, which is kind of a massaging of EOS for personal injury firms. But, you know, having something that you use as your operating system is so important. But that concept of data-driven decisions is so overlooked, I think, in the personal injury space for whatever reason. And I, you know, this is just anecdotally from dealing with thousands of personal injury firms over my career, but I'm curious, you know, what data do you guys look at in terms of your KPIs to track to make sure that you're operationally efficient and ensuring long-term growth of the firm?
Yeah. So for us, generally, it's going to be our revenue as our big starter. Cases in, you know, so what new cases have we signed versus what our case signed goal is. So we have a goal every quarter, you know, and a yearly goal, quarterly goal, and a monthly goal. What are our closed cases? And then so those closed cases to the revenue gives us what is our average case value, you know, so as we're hitting on that, we want to make sure that we're bringing that up every, you know, ideally every month, but our average case value keeps going up. And then we take a look, we have a Google review goal. And then so that I also have margins on my attorneys to see the production on my attorneys and see what they're doing. And then to be very transparent too, we've actually just hired and are in the process of starting our kind of onboarding with a fractional CFO as well to kind of help, you know, keep things moving forward in that regard. So I think that'll be one of our big next steps in 2025 is that fractional CFO piece, because the biggest piece that we've kind of never been able to fully get in sync is that profitability piece. And that's what his sole job is going to be, is kind of really sync, you know, hitting on that piece of it.
It's funny, it's overlooked that the fractional solutions and, you know, outsourcing solutions for law firms, that's a little self self-motivated since we are an outsourcing partner for lien resolution, but you know, just this idea of really examining what solutions will help the firm be profitable and grow, and evaluating that is one of the key things, you know, having that fractional person until you get to the point where you have someone full time is such a critical thing to make sure ultimately that you have all the data, because if you don't have that one piece of data, right, it's you have a hole there that you're missing. I'm curious too, we recently read and something that was put out there by John Natchell from Fireproof talking about time on desk. And I thought that was such a brilliant way of talking about the metric of looking at when you bring a case in until you actually complete it and all the different phases. He had three different phases, which I thought, again, was really great way of breaking it down and then looking at those phases to see where you can take days out from the process, because it speeds up revenue and also speeds up resolution for the client. And I just thought that was such a great thing to start getting personal injury firms to think in those terms.
Yes. And I've had conversations with John actually about this. And we both have in common that, back in the day, I was a diehard Detroit Pistons fan. I grew up in Ohio, pretty close to where John, you know, not too far from where he's at in Michigan. But we had a nice love affair of the Pistons from back in the day. But we were talking about this idea of it too. And I'm a believer that we can always find ways, especially with technology these days, but also in finding ways to make our team members more efficient, right? It's like the value, like what value are we giving? And now my job as CEO though, is how can I assist my people as much as possible to take that time on desk and go like this? Because the shorter that we can make it, the faster we're actually working and getting money in our client's pocket, the faster the firm is being refed. And one of the things that that Martel talked about to me once was this idea of he can tell how well a business is going to do by their churn rate. The churn rate for us is going to be our close rate. To me, close does not mean just saying that we have a settlement or that there is a verdict. Close means money in your account, period. And so until that is done, because I mean, I'm sure you've seen it and there are others out there where the idea of like, well, I've gotten the verdict, hands up, I'm moving on. You know, it's like Bill Belichick, right? On to Cincinnati. Well, you can't do it yet because the case is not closed. We actually have to get, until that client has money in their hand, we still haven't completed our duty yet to them. And so I do think it's one of those things where, you know, and that's how we can shorten that time on desk is by making sure liens are on point all throughout, by making sure that we are constantly communicating with our clients and things aren't surprising to them, by making, you know what I mean, by all of those things. And by even honestly, sometimes like we just closed one out recently where the attorney, he's like, I'm being a pest right now. And I'm like, but guess what you being a pest to the other side did? It got them to write the check and send it. If we hadn't been a pest and just kind of did that hands-off mentality, nothing would have actually happened. Nothing would have been done. And so I think it's very important that that time on desk piece is constantly looked at on what are we doing? And that the way you can actually, I think, get your team members into it is you have to be really transparent and open with your numbers, because then they will see day in and day out, where are we? What are we doing as a firm? And where do we need to be? So they need to know both, because then it's those things that people that are, and generally attorneys are fairly competitive, and they want to make sure that we're hitting the goals because they're part of that team and that unit. And so I think it's those things that are really, really important.
Well, you made my argument that I'm making in a blog post I'm getting ready to write on disbursement, the idea of disbursement, right? That, and you know, the things that hold up disbursement oftentimes are liens. So it's a nice little dovetail. So I want to transition, because I said I was going to come back to it on coaching and masterminds. So I saw you post something about the importance of coaching, and you emphasize experience, insight, and track record as part of the vetting process of a coach, someone who's done the work themselves and can help you achieve those goals. I'm curious about, you know, what would you give in terms of advice to a personal injury lawyer who's thinking about selecting a coach and how you find the right coach?
Yeah. So I think it's important that you, one is I think you're very, you have to be very aware of where you currently are. And then I think you have to have your vision of where you want to be. Now, then when you're looking for that coach, I think there's two types of coaches that you want. One is you want that coach that's going to be like, just like that bit of, you know, they're just that close to where you are, right? They're just that little bit ahead of you. And then the other coach that you want to look at potentially having or following or kind of, you know, finding out about is going to be that person that's, you know, 10 to 50X further ahead than you are. Because the one close helps you get there, right? They keep you moving. They've got the ideas that you can actually implement immediately. You can then keep things moving forward. The one that's way up there, they show what's possible. So they're the ones too that are showing you, no, you know what? If you keep on going, this is what's possible. And so I think it's the ideal one of kind of really vetting those people out. And then it's deciding kind of what works best for you. And I always go back to the show Biggest Loser from way back in the day, where you end up with two coaches. You end up with a Bob Harper or Jillian Michaels, right? Bob was the really nice coach, and he just wanted to hold your hand and walk you through your workouts and things like that. Or Jillian would sit there and yell at you, you know, and tell you to get up off your butt and do the thing. You need to know within yourself what's actually going to motivate you and which kind of, you know, which kind of personality is actually going to be the best cohesive one with you. A lot of things these days, you know, from, you know, Martell to like Nick Rowley or others, it's the idea you want a coach really that's going to give you brutal honesty. They're going to not sugarcoat things for you because you're not paying a coach to tell you what you want to hear. You're paying a coach to help you achieve your goal. And so there's going to be some hard things said. And I was just at the Summit of Greatness. So Lewis Howes, who does the School of Greatness podcast, and he David Goggins got up and spoke for a minute. And then he did Q&A at the end. One of the things Goggins, this guy asked him, he's like, David, I've been trying to lose like 30 pounds for the last 10 years, and I just can't do it. David walks around for a minute. He's like, say what you said again. He's like, I've been trying to lose 30 pounds. And David's like, and? He's like, for the last 10 years. And he's like, and? He's like, I just can't do it. And David looks at him. He's like, what do you want me to do about that? He's like, you've got much bigger issues than just me in this quick hit telling you what to do right now. Because there's something bigger there holding you back. And that's maybe not the goal you actually really want because you don't want it bad enough. And so I think it's really being real with yourself on what are your goals and what do you want to actually try to achieve.
Yeah, that brutal honesty is something I've experienced in terms of, you know, athletics and on the business side. You know, I just remember, you know, when I was racing, cycling, I had a coach because everybody really does need a coach. I mean, that's like a kind of, we skipped over that in terms of selection, but fundamentally, you know, it's hard to achieve things unless you're the exception without people that mentor or coach or the support groups, right? But that, you know, I remember just getting evaluations of a particular workout and I thought I did all right. And then he looked at the data and went, no, that's, you know, you got to step up your intensity if you really want to be prepped for the next race you're going to race in and be on the podium. You know, and not having someone that evaluates what you're doing, again, that someone that's outside looking in objectively at the data is such a, you know, valuable thing as you're trying to build and scale an organization.
I agree 100%.
So I know you also have talked about the importance of masterminds and are involved in masterminds and being passionate about the business side of operating a personal injury law firm. How has that helped you balance the business side of running a practice with maintaining high standards of legal service and growing and scaling?
Yeah. So there's nothing better than a mastermind, both to get ideas and to help solve your issues. Generally the ones that I'm a part of, they, you know, will have a hot seat where you'll take your biggest issue that you have and sit in a small group and you'll say it out what it is. And then brutal honesty, you get it back on, you know, here's the things that you could do or do differently. Or even for me that, you know, I've had it where, like you said, people are just like, you're not showing up anymore, or you're not doing this, you know what I mean? And from everything that they've heard. So that's the hot seat side of it. So you can do that to help, you know, solve an issue. Or alternatively, I've been part of masterminds too, where they'll come in with what's the best idea that you've had working over the last quarter. And then everybody shares what the best idea that they've had is. So talk about a great way to take your firm that's here right now, and you're getting just great idea after great idea after great idea, and you can now skyrocket so much faster than you could have if you had never gone. And so I think it's sitting in a room with people, again, where you're here and others are here. And so that are above where you're at. So that way too, that you're like, hey, I'm able to feed on it. But then what's interesting through time as you go through the masterminds, you know, you start out at the lower level or what you feel like, hey, I don't really belong here. Then through time, what happens is you have stuff to contribute. You have stuff to give because, you know, there's going to be others that come in. And I would tell those people too, that if you're ever afraid to go to a mastermind, it's probably the room you need to be in, because that you have something to share. You've had a life experience. You've had something happen in another job. You've had something happen at your current job. And the reason you're in that room is we all most days can feel like we're on an island, and that we're the only one messing up, or it's the only, this bad thing is happening to us right now. But the reality is everybody's going through it. Everybody's had it happen or will have it happen, and somebody needs to hear it or is okay wanting to talk about it too. And so I think that's the benefit of community. And those masterminds are just something that I look at as a giant community.
Yeah, I've been a part of a lot of these communities and still am. And, you know, that support the growth and development of the person and your leadership style and all those things, along with just having people that you can turn to when there are challenges or how to capitalize on opportunities. It's all, you know, incredibly important to building a high performing organization, because you just, so rare to be able to do that without that kind of support. Well, you talked about being a voracious reader and books like Traction and Good Great and Buy Back Your Time. I'm curious, like, how have you used these resources to help you with your leadership style and the growth trajectory of your law firm?
Yeah, I think it's both, like, so the leadership style, definitely a lot of it's the internal piece, where you take it and you go, okay, is this something, am I seeing myself in this book? You know, so like, I like the way Patrick Lencioni writes quite a bit, where he writes almost in like the story or the fable narrative. And there's a lot of like, if you don't read those and not see yourself a little bit in certain pieces throughout his books, you know, there's certain things that happen there. You know, Buy Back Your Time is definitely a more functional, practical book that, you know, will walk you through. Same thing with Traction. What's interesting with Traction is he's also got Get a Grip, which is his like fable version of it, which I still always recommend that everybody read actually in conjunction with it. What was interesting is during 75 Hard, you have to physically read books. Most of the time I do it via audio. And so I read Jeff Olson's The Slight Edge, which is, it's not even out on Audible or anywhere, I don't think, audio-wise to get it. At least at the time it wasn't. Pretty similar to like The One Thing or Atomic Habits. But one thing Jeff even talks about in there is his favorite book of all time was Dan Millman's Way of the Peaceful Warrior. And so I went and I read that as my next book after that during 75 Hard. And that book to me as a leader has so many nuggets on just how to give yourself as a leader some grace, how to let your feelings flow, but then you've got to be able to move on and pivot. Just all of these small little nuggets. And that's a book I probably read or re-listen to at least once a year. I think Dan has a way of writing. Again, it's a quasi fictional / true, you know, accounting of Dan's life, but has some very like, you know, kind of zen or chill pieces. But I think as leaders, you know, it's our job to kind of be the ones that are, you know, that are the stable line, you know, in your business. And if we're sitting here running really high highs and really low lows, you know, our team's probably on pins and needles going, who's going to show up today? And so one thing I love about the way Dan does it is there's a lot of things in there where it's like, okay, I could take that and kind of move forward and, you know, and just be the calm for the team, you know, as they're stressing about the case or they're stressing about things. And so not to say that what we do as CEOs or owners isn't hard every day. It's hard. But for the people out there, we've got to show up for them and we've got to be the calm for them.
Well, good segue into the next question I was going to ask you about, because I've seen you mention being committed to fostering a supportive and thriving work environment at your firm. So how have you created that positive culture and kept your team motivated, engaged with how you show up?
Yeah. So we do a morning meeting once a week. It's pretty casual. So I think everybody should have at least a touch base even once a week, if not daily. But you need to find what your cadence works for you. So ours is a quick calendar review. It's a question of the day and a quote of the day. And so each team member hosts it on every week. So there's somebody new that's responsible. So we run through a whole rotation. So I only do it once every 20 weeks. And so it's for that. That's one piece. We do a quarterly activity for the whole team. I call it Force Firm Fun Time. The reality is you don't have to go if you don't want to. However, for Q4, it's our holiday party. There we'll do White Elephant. But we also at Lewis House. So again, you steal every good idea. At the Summit of Greatness, Lewis did a whole rock, paper, scissors tournament. And so we did it last year at the holiday party for everybody. So including, spouses, partners, and friends. And then we'll do it again this year. The winner gets a cash prize. But we've done the indoor skydiving, painting with a twist. I think it's important to step out a little bit and do those things because, as PI firms these days, we get food delivered from the vendors, and it's not always the healthiest stuff or what have you. So we sponsor a gym membership for team members who want it, that are close to the gym or want to be able to use it. I get a lot of people that'll go to it over lunch and things like that. But I think it's also the idea too of just doing legitimate touch bases with your team members and just saying, hey, how's it going? And talking to them not only about that zoned case, or how what money they're bringing in or what have you, but also talking to them about, now's the perfect time to do it. How was their Thanksgiving? Or, how's their holiday going? How was their weekend? Did they do anything fun? Whatever that may be. We have a fairly light, dress code at our office. I have tattoos. So I'm not anti any of that. I call my team the Island of Misfit Toys from Rudolph because everybody kind of, we all have this idea of what a cookie cutter paralegal would look like. But the reality is that's not real, man. Most of the time I've seen is paralegals that end up with certificates or what have you. I'd rather get somebody maybe, that worked at Starbucks and was really great at customer service. We can train that other stuff in. And so being really open and honest with that, talking to them about feedback. I also think too, the way that we help that culture is, having quick, direct conversations. So we don't let the gossip mill kind of foster. I was talking to one of my attorneys today about that. Because her and I used to work at a family law firm together. And we're just it's really boring here. And it's a conversation I actually have with most of my attorneys is look, if you're looking for exciting and that kind of grind, and things like that, this probably isn't the place. And that's okay. There's a lot of other places where you can go and do that, but this isn't it. I want something that's fairly boring. I want to respect my people's time whenever they're on vacation. I don't want to talk to them then. And they don't want to hear from me. And that's okay. And I really want to make sure that their time is honored. But when they're here, they've got all the tools and capability and ability to do a really good job for the clients while they're here.
Since you've engaged in a lot of personal and professional growth activities based on what we've talked about today, what three pieces of advice would you give to law firm owners who are looking to scale their firms but feel overwhelmed by the challenges?
Yeah. So I think number one would be to get a coach. Get a coach sooner than later, and do it today. And you may say to yourself, I don't have the money to do it. And again, the question or response would always be, if you don't do it, you're never going to have the money to do it more than likely. And so one would be to get a coach. Number two would be to find your role and find you for yourself from a scaling standpoint. I think as CEOs and owners, you've got to get out of the way. let people shine in the areas where they're good, and you will do find what areas you are good at, but then get out of the way and let your people do their jobs. I once had an employee, as we were walking down the hall, say, "Hey, do you know where the wet signature power of attorney documents go here in the office?" And I looked at her and I said, "I don't." And she goes, "You know, shut up." She's like, "Yeah, you do." And I'm like, "No, I don't. Because if I knew that, then I'm in the wrong seat right then. I don't need to know that right now. And it's not really important." And then lastly, I think, and it's a quote I got from, I just saw Will Guidara speak recently, and I've loved his book, is probably my favorite book this year that I've read. Unreasonable Hospitality, but he spoke at a conference and he's like, the thing that stuck out is this idea of stop taking yourself so seriously. I think the reality is we're not brain surgeons. I mean, look, we're really important people, but at the end of the day, and what we do for our clients is super important, and what we do for our team is super important, but we need to stop taking ourselves so seriously, because being an attorney is stressful. And running a business is stressful. But if we can't have some fun while we're doing it, then what are we doing it for? And so that's what I think the way you scale is by making it a fun environment. Not fun, you know what I mean? Not fun, obviously, what we do day in and day out. But the reality is stop taking yourself so seriously. Because if you stay super serious all the time, it's going to be really, really hard to grow and scale.
Some great advice. Last question. Always ask it. Very open-ended. So you can answer it however you want. What's your view as a trial lawyer?
Yeah, so I think over anything else, as a trial lawyer, you've got to get your reps in. It's like we talked about earlier, from physical activity or going to the gym or what have you. You need to fall down on your open and screw it up. But you don't want to screw it up the day of the trial. You have probably a group of other employees that you work with, and you probably could get 10 minutes to do a quick open for somebody in your office. And I would recommend going in there and saying, "Hey, can I stand up and do my open in front of you?" And do it cold. It's not going to be perfect. But you get your reps in, because guess what? Every time you do it, and probably by the time you actually get to trial, you should have done that open, you know, my guess would be at least 20 to 40 times, you know, just over and over. And you're constantly getting a little better and a little bit better and tweaking it. And what it makes you do too is it makes you know the case better. But I think you've got to get your reps in. And the only way you do that is by putting yourself out there a little bit. And if you're going to be a trial lawyer, you can't hide back in the shadows. You just can't in that sense. And so you've got to put your reps in. And you've got people that'll do it. And even if you're a solo trial attorney, there are plenty of people that you could hop on a Zoom call, just like what we're, you know, what we do day in and day out, and you can hop on with somebody and do it that way too.
Some great advice and tips, Christopher. I'm grateful that you took the time. If any of our listeners have an interest in talking about the coaching aspects or masterminds, or have a case in Colorado Springs they need to refer to you, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Yeah, so you can email me at chris@springslawgroup.com. Or you can call me on my cell or text me at 719-291-6346.
Thanks, Christopher. And again, thanks for joining me today. And we'll see everybody on the next episode of Trial Lawyer View.
Here is another episode of Trial Lawyer View. We hope you enjoy today's guest and discussion. Tune in to our next episode for more helpful insights from fellow trial lawyers and practice experts. This podcast is brought to you by Synergy. Visit partnerwithsynergy.com to learn more about how Synergy can free your firm to focus on what it does best.